Hello and welcome to McLean's on the Hill. I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill Bureau Chief for City News and Rogers Radio.
And I'm Aaron Wherry, Associate Editor for McLean's Magazine.
If you can't beat them, join them. That seems to be the motto in Alberta as the political map changes dramatically in an unprecedented move in Canadian politics. Nine Wild Rose MLAs, including the leader of the opposition, Danielle Smith, defect to the governing PCs. The president of the Wild Rose Party gives us his thoughts.
They weren't the only surprise defections this week. NDP MP Glenn Thibault has quit his party and federal politics entirely to run in a by-election for the Ontario Liberals. To explain his switch, we're joined by the new provincial candidate for the Grits, Glenn Thibault.
The McLean's panel weighs in on the defections and the surprise news of a U.S. deal with Cuba.
And we'll have a preview of our special year-end edition of McLean's on the Hill, including interviews with Finance Minister Joe Oliver, NDP leader Thomas Mulcair, and Liberal leader Justin Trudeau.
For your politics, for your power, welcome to The Hill. Alberta's political scene is in a state of shock. On Wednesday, nine MLAs with the official opposition Wild Rose Party, including leader Danielle Smith, abandoned ship, announcing they are joining the governing PCs.
Today we stand together, ready to move on from past partisan rivalries and lead Alberta with renewed focus and a strong sense of purpose.
Premier Jim Prentice was happy to welcome his new caucus members.
This is a unification of Conservatives. I have not moved the party in any direction. We are moving ahead as a broad tent, progressive Conservative party that can accommodate these nine individuals. As people whom we respect and whose voices we want inside our party and our tent.
The move is unprecedented in Canadian politics, and it has left many Wild Rose supporters feeling betrayed. It was only in November that Smith criticized two of her MLAs who crossed the floor to the PCs.
On our show back in March, as the PC leadership race was getting underway, I asked Smith about Conservatives like Jim Prentice who were considering a run.
I would tell my friends in the federal Conservatives, and the names you mentioned are my friends, just don't do it. This party is too damaged and too wrecked to fix. I can't imagine why somebody would want to come in from the outside, seeing how caucus rips apart their leaders when they start stumbling, seeing how this party rips apart their leaders when they start stumbling, and also seeing how impossible it is to implement a positive agenda of change. The problem with the party having been in power for 43 years is it's stacked with people who fell in love with decisions that they made decades ago and don't want to change them. It's the reason why we can't seem to get progress on any of the issues we're trying to raise in the legislature.
It's safe to say Wild Rose supporters are angry over this about-face. And to talk more about the flip, we're joined by the president of the Wild Rose Party, Jeff Calloway. Jeff, thank you very much for joining us on the show today.
Glad to be here, Cormac. Thank you.
I guess we'll start from the start. How did this begin? What happened here?
Well, you know, I think it starts with our leader and Rob Anderson as well. But specifically our leader, she took the loss of the by-elections hard, and I think it was a blow to her that Ian Donovan and Kerry Toll crossed the floor. At the AGM, she said that she was squarely focused on achieving power next election, and so I think it's pretty clear that she was strictly focused on being in government at whatever cost, and I think her actions and the rest of caucus demonstrate that it's frankly more about the trappings of power and being there than the principles and the voters who elected them to represent them on a principled basis.
Now, in the news conference yesterday, Danielle Smith said this is about reunification of Conservatives and Conservative values, and that Jim Prentice holds the same values that she had been fighting for as the leader of the Wild Rose Party, and that's why she's crossing the floor. But you say this is all about personal, political game and opportunism.
Correct. The offer letter that was referenced and went out to all members of caucus as a pitch, as a justification or a way to legitimize their action or their... It's basically just a floor crossing is all it is. The only thing that is of any material consequence in there is for them to guarantee their own nominations, which just speaks to that personal motivation versus principles. And of course, if we think about the PC party, frankly, the reason the Wild Rose exists is because the PC party doesn't even act on their principles. They don't or their policies. They just had an AGM where they adopted a number of policies, including, you know, railway ferries for cars, and no one ever acts on that, and they never have. And so to believe that all of a sudden they will change their tune and start acting on their policies is frankly politically naive. And, you know, Premier Prentice, he's a strong politician. I am not taking anything away from that. But at the same time, he's not exactly new to the PC party as an outsider. He's been involved with them for years and years. He endorsed Premier Stelmach's royalty review. You know, he was behind Alison Redford. All this is a different face on the same organization with all of the same MLAs, except now a handful more.
The offer from Danielle Smith for the Wild Rose Party to join the PC party, that's off the table, I take it.
That is completely off the table. I'll read you the line from our news release. The Wild Rose Executive Committee and Caucus have unanimously rejected the reunification proposal. And I can tell you the overwhelming feedback from members is there is no point in even putting it to a vote. It's like voting if you believe the sun will come up tomorrow. Of course it will.
We've tried to reach out to these nine MLAs, or some of them anyway, as well as Danielle Smith, and so far we haven't heard back. They haven't granted us an interview. But in an interview that I did with Danielle Smith back in March, I asked her about the PC leadership race, and Jim Prentice's name was floating about, and I brought up the people who were being talked about, and she said, this party is too damaged and too wrecked to fix. Then, with those floor crossings that you mentioned a little bit earlier, she had some very sharp words for people who were crossing the floor, saying that it was all about opportunism. So when you hear her words for a long time now about these issues and about the PC party, and then she turns around and joins that very party that she had been criticizing so fiercely, how does it feel as a member of that party, and how? What have you been hearing from other supporters of the Wild Rose about this?
Well, I can tell you the overwhelming support is, frankly, if anything, it has lit the fire of the members in the party, and even those who are in other parties, to really re-engage and get involved and get fired up and donate even more to the party than, you know, we've been very successful in doing. So that's been very encouraging. I know our MLAs are getting literally hundreds of emails and texts and just phone calls of support to keep going. And, you know, it's pretty tough to, at least for Danielle, to live with the words of considering Kerry Toll a betrayal when think she could use those words for herself. So
is that the feeling amongst all supporters then, that they've been betrayed by Danielle Smith?
Those would be Danielle Smith's own words to describe her own move today.
All right. And so you're seeing a positive spin on this, where you seem to be gaining some support and fundraising off of this, what appears to many people from other parts of the country as a big loss for the Wild Rose, in the sense that you've lost so much of your caucus, but this is turning into a positive for you.
You know what? I know it may sound odd for people in the rest of the country, but, you know, we have a dynamic here in Alberta where, you know, 75% of the voters tend to vote either PC or Wild Rose, such that we could divide the vote in half, and we would have a Wild Rose or a PC MLA in every constituency in the province. I mean, we were just polling at 29%, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago as a party. And granted, you know, on different conditions, of course, but at the same time, we have over 22,000 members in the party. We raise over $2 to $2.5 million a year in fundraising. We've got dozens and dozens of constituency associations that are vibrant and re-energized as a result of this move. We received over 440,000 votes in the last election. And hey, if 30,000 of those votes would have been perfectly applied elsewhere, we would be the government right now. We shouldn't forget that in the spring, we were polling very strong in the province. If an election would have been held, we would have won. So, you know, it's been said that a week is a long time in politics, and that's so true today, and it will be so true tomorrow. And as we look ahead over the next year and the difficult decisions that the government is going to have to make, and looking back at our history of when our message has really resonated with Albertans, being a fiscally conservative option, socially responsible, that welcomes all faiths and provides a voice for all faiths, we will, I believe, come out strong from this.
All right. You've lost a huge chunk of your caucus, including your leader. And come the next election, you're going to have a strengthened PC party with Jim Prentice, whose approval ratings are above 50%. How do you battle that then after a situation like this?
Well, sure. You know what? I would point to a couple of things. I mean, we were written off for dead when Premier Redford assumed the premiership. Her approval ratings were through the roof, and you know, there was countrywide, I believe, belief that she would make a good premier, and ultimately she proved otherwise. Frankly, the only thing that Premier Prentice has accomplished so far is to basically adopt the Wild Rose recommendations to sell off the government air fleet and not change the license plates. So those are very minor decisions of low-hanging fruit that are politically popular, but it's going to be a much different situation as we come into the new year and we're dealing with a $7 billion deficit, which is actually more than our education budget, and having to make the hard decisions and that will be required in this province to see us through.
And what happens next? Where does the party go from here? You've lost your leader, so I imagine you'll have a leadership race that you'll have to get going here pretty soon.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we'll be appointing an interim leader here shortly. Details of our leadership race will be released in January. I can tell you already this morning I've got a couple of people that are of great character that I'm would be very welcome to have into our running as candidates in our leadership race. And so, you know, I look forward to that. I think this will be a great party building exercise. And again, we've got, you know, a vibrant constituency organization all across the province, 23,000 members. Jim Prentice, I think, had 14,000 people vote for him and his leadership. So we're vibrant and strong.
All right. Thank you so much, Jeff, for your time today. I really do appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Cormac.
That was the president of the Wild Rose Party, Jeff Calloway, speaking about the defection of his leader and 8 MLAs to the governing PCs in Alberta.
Still to come on the show, we speak with Glenn Thibault about his decision to quit the Federal New Democrats and run for the Ontario Liberals. The McLean's panel weighs in on the week of defections, and we bring you a preview of our special year-end episode.
Welcome back to McLean's on the Hill. I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill Bureau Chief for City News and Rogers Radio.
And I'm Aaron Wherry, Associate Editor for McLean's Magazine.
Coming up on the show, the McLean's panel weighs in on all the floor crossings in federal and provincial politics, and we bring you a preview of our upcoming special year-end episode. But first,
a day before the Wild Rose exodus, many federal New Democrats felt blindsided while Ontario Liberals were all smiles. The reason? Glenn Thibault. The now former NDP MP announced that he was leaving the party and federal politics to join the Ontario Liberals and run in the upcoming by-election in his hometown of Sudbury. Thibault was first elected as a New Democrat in the October election of 2008.
To speak more about his change of political allegiances, we're joined now by the new Ontario Liberal candidate for Sudbury, Glenn Thibeault. So, Glenn, first of all, thank you very much for joining us on the show this week.
No problem. Happy to be here.
You were the subject of this big surprise, one of a few surprises in politics this week. First of all, I guess the big question is why?
Well, first thing, Cormac, is yes, it was a big surprise, so much so that I was trending on Twitter, so I was pretty excited to see that because I had never been trending on Twitter before. But all kidding aside, the seriousness of it for me was, you know, it was just time for me to move on. And I've been saying, you know, for the last few days, we weren't seeing eye to eye on many things. Some of those relate to caucus confidentiality. So even though I'm no longer a member of the caucus, I do try to respect that. But you know what? It was almost like death of by a thousand cuts over some time. And it's just you start to move to different areas. And when the unexpected by-election, our resignation of Joe Cimino, the MPP here in Sudbury, happened, it just, you know, started to look better for me in terms of how I could really start making a difference for folks. So, again, here in Sudbury, right, and that's, again, the focus is making a difference for my constituents, and that's why I started looking at, you know, making myself happy again, but at the same time, being able to be a strong voice to work on the really important issues for the folks here in Sudbury.
Now, when you say you don't see eye to eye, I understand you say you can't get into specifics, but was this over policy issues or was it issues
there
that happened with personalities in the room?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of really good people in the NDP. So the personality thing, while I know some people are trying to say that's what it's all about, it really wasn't for me. Well, you know, there are clashes within any political party. You know, you work through those, and that's part of being in a caucus. But I started looking at some policy pieces, just some of the way, you know, you feel you're treated sometimes, not just yourself, but individuals within a caucus. And so those things were starting to really build up. But again, it came to looking at the opportunity to get into provincial politics, which is, if you start looking at the stuff that I was talking about a lot, in federal politics, a lot of it related to provincial politics. So I was very excited at the opportunity, and I really am energized to be involved in, you know, things like, you know, education, post-secondary education, you know, healthcare. There's so many things, even the Ring of Fire. The Ring of Fire is so important for my community. You know, while we were able to talk about it at the federal level, being engaged at that at the provincial level is something I'm extremely excited about being able to move forward. But I can't take anything for granted. That first things I got to do is get elected.
And just back on the not seeing eye to eye with the party, are you talking about just the party in general or the leader, Thomas Mulcair?
It's a combination of, I think, of all things. I have no ill will towards Tom Mulcair and anything along those lines. But again, right, it's for me, it was many of those, you know, the things that relate to leadership, to where the party is going, and those type of things. But there's, you know, I don't have any regrets about the 6 years that I had working with the federal NDP or anything that I was trying to accomplish at that level. But people grow, people move, you know, things change. And, you know, one of the things that I was starting to feel is I needed to move. I needed some change to be able to continue to do what I'd like to do, which is be a voice for the people of Sudbury, and looking at the opportunity that is here to do that, to make that difference by getting involved in provincial politics, I jumped at that. So that's why the change was coming for me. That's why I thought, you know what, it's important for me to be able to step back, think this through, which what I did. This wasn't an easy decision. It took a long time and a lot of thinking, but I thought, you know what, I'm resigning as a MP. I'll be doing that as soon as I can get my, you know, cases wrapped up and a few other things wrapped up and we have both offices taken care of. But it was just time for me to move on. Like other people grow and adapt and change, I was doing the same thing, and the provincial side really fit.
You stand by your decision, and you're saying that you're doing something that's better for your constituents, and it's always been your focus. The reaction from your now former colleagues, they don't really see it that way. And some are calling you a turncoat. How does it make you feel when your former colleagues, people you used to sit next to and work with, are using such terms as turncoat for your flip?
I was expecting that, Cormac, especially by, you know, some of them. I know they're very, very passionate about party politics. And I get that, and I understand that, and I respect their decision on how they want to say that. I've also been on the phone with many of them, and many of them are saying they're sad and disappointed, sad to see me go, but they understand. Now, some of them aren't going to do that publicly, of course, but, you know, I don't put a lot of weight into, you know, the name calling and those type of things. People are critical of the decision. I can respect that. You know, they have some very good points about it. I don't begrudge them that. That's fine. Party politics can become a blood sport, and people are very passionate about that. But you know what? For me, it's an opportunity, as I said, to be able to get in and make a difference here at the provincial level, at the really important issues. And, you know, the premier has a great plan. She has great plans for this province, and I'm excited to look at being part of that.
Okay, so let's turn then our focus to that provincial issue. Many people would have thought that if you were going to jump to the provincial level of government, that you would jump with the Horvath New Democrats. Why not? What was wrong with the Horvath New Democrats as a politician who's always identified as an NDP up until this point? What was wrong with them that you couldn't go to the provincial NDP?
There are many instances that people that know me, and even in the, you know, community newspapers here, that the ONDP and I didn't see eye to eye on many things, and even during the last spring election. So for me, it wasn't necessarily a good fit. And again, the Liberals reached out to me and talked to me about what they would, you know, like to see happened for Sudbury. And when we were having those conversations initially, you know, feeling each other out, and I think that's a fair thing to say, you know what, we match. Are we 100% matching on everything? No. But did I match 100% with the federal NDP when I first started, and, you know, even, you know, last week? No. But looking at where I think I can do the best for my community, I always do that, and when I'm basing my decisions, I base my decisions on what's best for myself and my family and my community. And this one really works in terms of making sure that I can continue to be that strong voice in Toronto at Queen's Park for the folks here in Sudbury.
What have your constituents been saying?
Well, the Timmy's crew is always the, you know, do the walkthrough of Tim Hortons, and you can get all sides and all angles. And I'm getting lots of support from people saying they're very excited to see me going where I'm going, that, you know, they've always voted for me in the past, but it wasn't necessarily for the party. They weren't supporters of the party. They were supporters of me, and that they'll support me in this decision. And then, of course, there's the others out there that say they're disappointed. But when we're meeting face to face, they're at least cordial, and they explain their position, and I listen to it, and we shake hands, and, you know, we walk away. But let's you know, put this in perspective. I'm going to be resigning, you know, in the very near future, as quickly as I can, because I think, you know, the optics and the importance of doing this is important. I'm putting it all on the line here. I'm resigning federally and then going into a provincial by-election. I am actually putting this to my decision to the people. So if the people are upset with my decision, they can cast their ballot however they see fit. If people still think that, you know, I'm going to be the best representative that I can, and I think my past examples and my past experience and, you know, my leadership, if people trust in that's going to continue at Queen's Park, then, you know, I'm hoping that they'll trust me again and give me their votes and send me down to Queen's Park once the by-election is done.
There have been some suggestions that you're leaving federal politics and jumping to provincial and making the switch from NDP to Liberal because the New Democrat fortunes in the next federal election look pretty, well, not pretty dim, but dimmer than what some would have expected. And you want to join a winning team. And this may be about power, something that's recently been in the news with what's happening in Alberta with the Wild Rose, but that's a totally different situation.
Please don't associate me with Wild Rose.
But you know, some of the suggestions did pop up before we started hearing about all that Alberta stuff. So some of those suggestions have popped up. Is this about power? Are you going to have a nice position? Is this about being in a winning party?
This is about, as I've said to you numerous times, about being the best representative I can for my city and for the riding. It's about being involved in the issues that are passionate to me and to my community. So, you know, as I said, education, healthcare, the Ring of Fire, you know, extraction, resources, you know, mining resources, like the list goes on that I'm excited to be part of. You know, the premier has a great plan. I read the mandate letters that she has given to all of the cabinet ministers about how these plans are going to move forward. I'm excited about being part of that. So this, to me, is not at all an opportunity about getting into power or, you know, any of the opportunistic things that people are talking about. If they really want to look at it, as I said to you earlier, I'm putting this all on the line. So I'm not trying to be an opportunist. I'm trying to be the best representative that I can be for my community.
You're going to be going through a nomination process coming up for this by-election, and you'll be going through a vote here. But there's also another vote that people will have their eyes on in 2015. There's going to be a federal election, and you have left the NDP. You've joined the provincial Liberals. So as most provincial Liberals will likely be doing in the next election, will you be supporting Justin Trudeau and the federal Liberals and helping them campaign in 2015?
The way I look at that right now is I haven't even started to think about that. I'm still in the process of trying to make sure that I win my by-election. So, you know, you may have to come back to me and ask me that question down the road, but right now, my total focus is making sure that I'm part of the Wynn government and that I am the best MPP that I can be for the people here in Sudbury.
Would it be safe to say you won't be campaigning for the federal NDP?
That would be safe to say because obviously I was there once and they've pretty much shut that door, but that's not something I would even be interested in doing.
Thank you very much for joining us. I really do appreciate your time.
No problem. Thanks a lot.
That was Glenn Thibault, the former New Democrat who quit this week to run for the Ontario Liberals in the Sudbury by-election.
Coming up on the show, the Maclean's panel discusses all the defections in politics this week, and we preview our interviews with Governor General David Johnston, Finance Minister Joe Oliver, NDP leader Thomas Mulcair, and Liberal leader Justin Trudeau for our special year-end episode.
Welcome back to Maclean's on the Hill.
It's now time for the Maclean's panel. I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill Bureau Chief for City News and Rogers Radio. And I'm joined, as always, by the Associate Editor of Maclean's and co-host of Maclean's on the Hill, Aaron Wherry, as well as the Ottawa Bureau Chief for Maclean's, John Geddes. Thanks very much for joining me, guys. We're going to start off with this Glenn Thibault issue and the fact that he's quitting the federal New Democrats and jumping to provincial politics and joining the Ontario Liberals. First of all, Aaron, were you surprised when you heard the news? And is it a sign of some troubles possibly in the New Democrat caucus? Because he's not the only one to have left the caucus over the last little while.
It's an odd move. I don't think there were any indications that it was coming. I don't think there were any kind of visible, obvious signs that there was a conflict between Thibault and the rest of the caucus or between him and Mr. Mulcair. He said since that there's, you know, he wasn't seeing eye to eye with the party, but he hasn't really elaborated on what that was. And to add to the oddity of it is the entire idea of a federal New Democrat going to the provincial Liberals, which is somewhat hard to understand. It's tough to say whether it's a real indication of anything in the caucus or within the NDP. It's definitely their most high profile of the losses they've had. Some MPs have scattered to different places, but they've been fairly sort of, I guess, minor characters within the story of Parliament. Glenn Thibault was national caucus chair. He was a prominent critic in their shadow cabinet. He seemed like somebody you would expect to be fairly prominent and central to the party, but now he's out. It's tough to figure with the NDP. I think if you'd gone back to 2011 and said, what's going to happen to this caucus, people would have made all sorts of guesses about, maybe a dozen MPs go and join the Bloc. It was such a strange situation they had coming out of that election that there were all sorts of guesses about where this was going to go. And so now they've had a few people scatter. But it's tough to find a coherent narrative in all those losses or a unifying reason why they've left. And so that's it makes it harder to pin this on Mulcair and say, oh, well, his caucus is falling apart. It's definitely not a good thing, but it's hard to say how bad it is without sort of some kind of unifying idea of what's going on here.
Could election chances have played into all of this, John?
Absolutely.
With Northern Ontario, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I've spent a little time talking to people in Northern Ontario over the past few months about how things are going there. I come from Northern Ontario, so I'm kind of interested. And there's no question that if you go back to, now I'm going back to August here, right? Before this fall session where, it's another whole subject, but where Justin hasn't had a great fall session. But before this fall session, there was a sense that in Northern Ontario, the Liberals were poised to pick up big gains in 2015. The sense was that the numbers Trudeau had racked up since he took over his leadership were solid in the North. And I know the Liberals across Northern Ontario were thinking they would take seats, including seats from New Democrats. I'll tell you, I don't know Glenn Thibault, I don't know what his motivations are, but people do not generally go to a more junior level of government when they think their position, the more senior level, is secure. That is a fact. People don't usually do it. So I suspect that he was looking at a tough race in 2015 in his riding. He feared he might lose it, and he thought it was safer in terms of his political future to be at the provincial level where the Liberals are pretty solid in Ontario and have a different type of machine than New Democrats have. So I think that's kind of what's going on here.
I
think it's one of those things where, for at least if you're looking at this from Mulcair's perspective and the NDP's perspective, it's almost like a government that keeps kind of racking up problems. You know, it's not necessarily one individual problem that causes long-term damage, but it's that sort of drip, drip, drip of problems coming up. And it just hurts that much more each time. And so, you know, if there's another caucus defection in the spring or, you know, another one next summer, then it starts to become a problem where even if they are somehow anecdotal and they're not connected, it just from a pure sort of outside look at it, it looks bad and it becomes a hard thing for them to say, you know, we're doing all right, we're a solid caucus if you're continually losing people.
Is it worse that almost every person who has left the caucus or jumped ship to another party, they keep bad-mouthing them after they leave and saying, you know, turncoat or this or that, sort of like death by a thousand cuts? Eventually, does that excuse wear thin?
Yeah, it gets a bit difficult to keep saying, oh, well, they weren't, you know, they were going for selfish purposes when, you know, we're up to like six or seven, then, you know, well, what exactly is going on here? Again, though, it's still hard to connect them. Like, what connects Lee Saint-Denis and Jean-François LaRose and Glenn Thibault? It's tough to say, really, that anything connects them. Hmm. I think there was going to be a natural amount of upheaval within the caucus after that strange election that saw them get so many MPs from Quebec. And then you necessarily get into a situation where sometimes MPs aren't happy. Again, though, it becomes sort of a tipping point. How many more, like, if you lose another one in the spring, it's almost the next moves that matter more. If they lose another one in the spring or another one in the summer, it becomes that much harder to say, don't worry, everything's fine, this caucus is okay, when you just keep losing people.
All right, another surprise that popped up this week in politics was an historic deal between the U.S. and Cuba. And there has been that tension there for more than 50 years. John, does it make sense that Canada played a key role in these negotiations, sort of acting as a middleman to help bring them together?
Canada basically hosted the talks, I'm told, about seven negotiating sessions in the 2013 into 14. Top secret, no leaks at all that I've heard of this happening. Couple points on that. One is it's a little bit awkward for the Harper government in the sense that there are lots of Canadian conservatives who have a fairly strong line on Cuba, a line that aligns with the right-wing of the Republican Party. So they're not naturally going to be delighted with this. On the other hand, an interesting behind-the-scenes element of this is that actually the Harper government's relationship with Cuba has been surprisingly strong. I'll give you an anecdote that was just explained to me today. In 2010, when Canada was going for a seat at the UN Security Council, a seat we didn't get, quite an embarrassment for the Harper government at the time. One of the staunchest supporters of Canada in that push, that failed push, was Havana. The Cuban ambassador to the UN lobbied aggressively for Canada, supported Canada in that, and there have been other interesting connections between Canada and the Cuban regime. A little complicated because it was probably stronger before Fidel was gone and his brother Raul took over, but still an interesting relationship. A relationship I don't think the Harper government wants to trumpet how good it is because it's complex for them politically, But still, diplomatically, interesting that we still had enough of those connections for Canada to be a comfortable home base for negotiations when Havana and Washington decided to sit down.
And probably good for the Prime Minister on the international stage when he's bringing a communist country closer to democracy and values that we...
A traditional role for a middle power like Canada is to try to keep on good terms even with countries that big powers... the United States, Britain, Russia, France, have trouble being on good terms with. One of the traditional strengths of a middle power is not getting into a situation where you just can't talk to someone. Historically, the Americans have relied on Canada, not just in the case of Cuba, but in the case of other sort of awkward or even rogue governments as a country that could do business and can make connections there. So this is we're seeing here a residual element of traditional Canadian diplomacy that maybe some people would have thought had evaporated during this particular government's rule. Apparently not.
Another surprise in politics is Alberta. And we are seeing the Wild Rose Party with defections to the governing PCs. This was the party that was set up to give the more right wing a voice, a disgruntled base in the PC party, a chance for them to finally have a choice on the ballot when they weren't happy with what was going on with the PCs. There are still many of them, even though Jim Prentice is getting good approval ratings, there are still many of them who are upset and want this option. And now we're seeing the leader of the opposition join the government. Have you heard of anything like this happening, Aaron?
No, it seems fairly unprecedented. And I imagine historians will spend some time going over Westminster records to try and figure out any example of this. It's unprecedented, and that's unprecedented for a reason. It's because usually the job of an opposition is to replace the government, not join it. It's mind-boggling to sort of observe from afar. It goes to this continued dominance of the progressive conservatives in Alberta that just seems, I mean, to look at it now, it seems almost insurmountable, really. It's impressive, I think, for Jim Prentice. Again, from an outsider's perspective, he comes in, he's a fresh start. He's, not put every foot right, but to suddenly have taken your opposition off the field, essentially, is impressive. I'm interested to see now what it means in Alberta generally, whether this causes any kind of discomfort with the idea that there really isn't a second party there that can challenge the PCs. At what point does that just become something that people are just uncomfortable with? Even if they're happy with how the progressive conservatives, even if they're naturally conservative in Alberta, at what point do people just sort of kind of get a bit uneasy about the situation?
John, you want to chime in?
A couple of things on this, Cormac. I know you know the situation out there probably better than we do. You should comment on it. But the Danielle Smith early last winter, when she was in Ottawa for the Canada 2020 conference, told me that she was in the process of taking the Wild Rose Party from being kind of a protest party to being a mainstream party. That's what she thought she was doing. Not taking them right into an existing mainstream. I thought she meant maybe still a standalone mainstream party, but evidently she
took her
down
literally.
A different path. So that obviously she saw that she had a challenge there in vying with Tories, but consider this just on from a little broader perspective. In North American politics, periodically the right fragments. In Canada, we saw it fragment when the Reform Party was born, and then coalesce again. In the U.S., there was a sense that the Republican Party might actually be somehow splitting into like the conventional GOP and the Tea Party movement within the last few years. And now you see the party kind of gravitating back towards a Jeb Bush-like kind of, I wouldn't call him a centrist, but a kind of a mainstream right-wing solution. There's something about this dynamic of right-wing protest movements rising up and then being absorbed back into their mother party, if it were, that seems to happen over and over again. And I think the natural dynamic of our kind of Western democratic systems is for parties of the center-left and the center-right to square off with one another. And periodically, a party on the sort of more social democratic left emerges in Europe, or in the case of the NDP in Canada, that can survive. But multiple parties on the right, multiple competitive parties on the right, it just doesn't seem to happen. It's an interesting sociological political phenomenon.
But those sorts of mergers usually happen when those parties are in opposition
This is a bizarre, I mean, in terms of that the logistics and the timing, the facts on the ground of this, not the broad perspective that, well, Wild Rose ended up to being hard to sustain or something like that, but the specifics of this, Danielle Smith making this move that she appears to be making, is just bizarre.
And let's quickly talk before we wrap up here about year-end polls. We had a couple that came out, and it's sort of showing that the race is tightening a little.
I mean, we had a pretty long run there of Justin Trudeau and the Liberals being, you know, clearly dominating the polls, and the Prime Minister has managed to correct that to some degree, especially this fall. I guess earlier this year there were signs of that. Why? He was able to play foreign policy, a tough line on terrorism, and to some degree, a kind of recalibrating his economic message or reminding people that he can bring a sort of family-friendly tax economic message. His critics scoffed at it, experts sliced and diced it, but it seemed to go over fairly well and at least temporarily put the opposition parties off their game a little bit, back-footing them. So I think there's a situation here where we're being reminded that this guy hasn't won several elections because he's a piker. He's won them because he's able to adjust to political circumstances.
Yeah, he's also an incrementalist in a way. With a lot of the changes that he's brought about, he has patience to deal with these things over a long period of time rather than just, you know, react and overreact.
And an incumbent prime minister at a time when international news and defense news is important, which is, I think, in every country in the world, serving incumbents tend to have an advantage on foreign policy and defense policy.
Thanks very much, guys. The Ottawa bureau chief from Maclean's Magazine, John Geddes, and the associate editor, Aaron Wary. And I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill bureau chief for City News and Rogers Radio.
Over the holiday break, Maclean's on the Hill will have a special year-end episode to recap 2014 and look ahead to the election year of 2015. We'll have a lot of special guests on the program as well. Governor General David Johnston joins us to discuss his mission over the last 12 months to make Canada a more caring, giving nation.
To capture that moment and say, this was special for me and the person who received the gift, and then say, I'm going to dare one of my friends, colleagues, peers, etc., to do the same, so that that person has the same satisfaction of helping another. And of course, we hope that this will ripple right across the country and we'll have an exponential increase in the acts of kindness that we see from day to day.
We speak with Bank of Canada Governor Stephen Poloz about the state of economic affairs, and we also have a conversation with Finance Minister Joe Oliver, who addresses the trouble with falling oil prices.
We'll continue to monitor the situation. The fact is, we don't know. Nobody knows where oil prices will settle, how long they'll stay at a low level, when they'll go up, this sort of thing.
2015 is going to be a big year with a federal election in the fall. We ask NDP leader Thomas Mulcair why he should be the next prime minister.
Because I lead Canada's best party that's always worked in the public interest. We brought in Saskatchewan, as you know, free universal public medical care. We're going to be the ones to bring in cross-Canada childcare.
We also have Liberal leader Justin Trudeau, who tells us there is nothing he would have done differently about the misconduct allegations against two of his MPs.
I received direct, serious allegations. As a leader, I had a duty to act. I needed to make sure that people understood that in 2014, we will not simply brush serious allegations like that under the rug.
Once again, tune back for our special year-end episode of Maclean's on the Hill. That's it for this week's episode.
Happy holidays. For more of your politics and power, join us next week on The Hill.